Let's open to Proverbs. And I never planned on covering every single proverb. Just a smattering of them. And so this evening will be our last evening. But I'd like you to turn to the last chapter, because you can't cover Proverbs adequately without looking at the last chapter. What does it take to be a woman of God? Now, some of you guys are mentally sort of checking out even as I speak, and either that or thinking, man, I should have brought my wife this evening or sent her. But there'll be much to learn from this for all of us, men and women. What does it take to be successful as a woman? And what is success for a woman, especially a woman who knows God? Sophie Tucker, the great philosopher, once said, here's what she thinks it takes to be a woman. She said, well, from birth to age 18, she needs good parents. And from age 18 to age 35, she needs good looks. And from age 35 to age 55, she needs a good personality. And after 55, honey, she needs cash. Well, you know, there's some wisdom there. And that's kind of the way the world sees things, isn't it? You know, we laugh because it's, you know, it's kind of true. And when you compare what God says is right and good and successful with what we normally associate with those things, there's something of a difference. We're going to be looking at Proverbs 31, of course, verse 10 through verse 31. The entire chapter is not devoted to womanhood, but these verses are. And what we're going to see is some very serious characteristics. Six of them, not all of them are something you can create or make happen. Some of them are the results. But they're simply six characteristics that we see in the chapter. Now, Proverbs 31, verses 10 to the end is, in the book of Proverbs, one of the most amazing of all of the poems within this poetry. And you know, Proverbs is poetry. But this is an amazing poem for a couple of reasons. For one thing, uncharacteristic of the book of Proverbs, it's generally speaking, it is a poem with one theme. It has to do with the woman who is wise, who walks with God. And the reason I say that's uncharacteristic of Proverbs is because Proverbs generally has lots of little sort of disjointed, what we might think are disjointed ideas within it. But every once in a while you come across a section that is devoted entirely, a full-length poem devoted entirely to a particular subject. And that's the way the closing of the book of Proverbs is. It's this beautiful poem which is an extolling of the woman who is wise. It is a very high praise for a godly woman. But there's something else interesting about it that doesn't come across in English at all, but in Hebrew is very obvious, and that is it is an acrostic poem, which means every stanza begins with a new letter of the Hebrew alphabet in order. And there were several of these in the scripture, but the reason that they have them is for memory, which means people memorized this. It was a point of wisdom to memorize, not just for women, but for men as well. And I'll tell you why, because the characteristics we see among women here being extolled and advised are also characteristics of men. See, character is character, whether you're a man or a woman. Godly character is godly character. It may play itself out in slightly different roles in life or whatever, but the character is the same. And if you know God, you're going to find the overlapping of these characteristics between men and women. See, scratch the surface of a person's life who knows the Lord, and you will find the character of God underneath. And there is this family likeness among brothers and sisters that is not simply a matter of being male or female. And the reason they memorized this and put it to work was because of that. It wasn't just for women. Men learn from it. And we're going to learn some things as well as men in the passage. I'd like to read the entire thing first, and then we'll come back and we'll look at these characteristics. Verse 10, an excellent wife, The Hebrew word is woman. The reason it's translated wife in most of the good translations is because it's obvious in the context that she is a married woman. But let me stress right up front that this applies across the boards, whether you're married or not. The characteristics are the same. And they need not be limited to only married women. So literally, an excellent woman who can find her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight, or willingly is the idea. She is like merchant ships, and she brings her food from a great distance, from afar. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. And she considers a field and buys it. And from her earnings, she plants a vineyard, and she girds herself with strength, and she makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good, and her lamp does not go out at night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle, and she extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet, and she makes coverings for herself, and her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teachings of kindness are on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up, and they bless her, and her husband also, and he praises her. And he says, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. So charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the product of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. It's a wonderful poem. Let's go back and have a look at the six characteristics that we find. If you're looking for a place to find maturity, something to shoot for, you can't find a better one than this. And it has been a standard for women all through the ages. You're part of a long history of godly people, both men and women. And both men and women have looked to this poem to find out what things they should be shooting for in their life, what things God says are part of a successful life. And the first one I want to mention, of course, is obvious, but it's not the first in the list in terms of beginning in verse 10. It's actually in verse 30. He gets to the very end of the poem, and he says, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. The first characteristic and the primary characteristic is the same as the primary characteristic for men. We've seen it over and over again. And if you want your life to really count for something, then give it to God first. If you want your life to have any kind of genuine, long-term success, then it must belong to God. Your soul must belong to God, and it doesn't start that way. Your soul doesn't belong to God automatically, just by virtue of being created. You must give it to Him. You must say, Lord, I want to belong to You. And for a woman, that might mean, I want to belong to You, Lord, more than I want to belong to a man. Now, that's a significant thing, because built into the souls of women is a desire to be bonded. As the same is true of men. It's not just women. We are designed to be bonded together, to create homes. And sometimes the Lord will bring to us a circumstance in which we must say, I would rather be with You, God, even if it means I don't have a mate. And if I do have a mate, You will always be, Lord, number one in my life, even more important than my mate. This woman is first and foremost loyal to the Lord, personally and always. That's in the phrase, the woman who fears the Lord. And that's Proverbs' way. If you've been with us in Proverbs, you know that's the Proverbs phrase for a person who says,
what God thinks of me is more important than what humanity thinks of me, and I will walk with the Lord no matter what. So that's the first characteristic of the woman. And notice that in verse 30, it contrasts two other very strong female characteristics that are highly thought of in our world, charm and beauty. Charm is a good personality, and beauty is obvious. It's just beauty. And that's exactly what Sophie Tucker, it left out cash, which I think is interesting, but Sophie Tucker had a couple of them right anyway. Personality and beauty. Now, there's nothing wrong with a good personality. And if you've got problems with your personality, it might not be a bad idea to work on it. And it's not bad to look good, and it's not bad to make yourself look good. But it's all fading. In fact, our next study will be in Ecclesiastes. And if you've read Ecclesiastes, you know Solomon, who had it all, said, it's all vain. And he uses the same word. It all goes away. The things that the world says are so important. And it's interesting that charm and beauty are the things that so often capture the attention, especially of the young. Especially of the young. Because they tend to come naturally. And if you've got an abundance of both of those, well, praise God for that. But don't put your faith in your charm and don't put your faith in your beauty. You put your faith in God and you let the character of God actually be the beauty that is within you. Christian women are beautiful. They are beautiful for 100 different reasons. But the most important is what's on the inside. And that's what he says. That's why at the end, even though we're starting with it, it's at the end of this poem, but the reason it's at the end of the poem is because that's the emphasis. They didn't do everything chronologically. They put it for emphasis at the end as the anchor point of the whole thing. So don't let the world tell you that your charm and your beauty are the most important aspects of who you are. And don't let the world tell you that you can let the other aspects of who you are slide in favor of the charm and the beauty, because that's a lie. The first characteristic, godliness. Genuine commitment to the Lord. Is this woman we're talking about more committed to the Lord, to His work, to His kingdom, than to anyone or anything else on earth? And that includes her husband. And it might even include her children. She's more committed to God than to anything or anyone else. The main characteristic. Now, the second characteristic, we go back to verse 10, and we'll start just working our way through in the order in which they're given. And notice it says, an excellent woman who can find. Her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. And she does him good and not evil all the days of his life. Well, we'll start with just verse 10. Here's the second characteristic. She is rare and valuable. Rare and valuable. And I want you to focus on that for just a moment, because this is not simply hyperbole. This is actual reality. A woman in a family, a woman in a relationship is far more valuable than any physical thing that a person can imagine. And he's speaking not just to the woman, but to the man. You know, it's really sad that men do not see that sometimes. They don't value the women in their lives. In fact, at our recent men's retreat, we talked quite a bit about this. But he says, Proverbs says, God says that women are far more valuable than anything in our lives. And our relationships with them are far more valuable. And it's interesting that it says she's rare, which means, ladies, that she doesn't happen automatically simply by virtue of the fact of being a Christian woman. You say, well, I've given my life to the Lord. I guess I'm going to turn out just like the Proverbs 31 woman. Not necessarily. Rare means rare. I looked it up. It means you don't find very many of them. Now, what that means, what that reminds us of, is the fact that if you do only what comes naturally to you, you will not be one of these rare commodities. That it takes some special training that God must do in our souls to create in us this kind of character. And as a Christian woman, what you need to be saying is, Lord, in what ways are you working in me to create in me this rare commodity? And how can I cooperate with that? And I'll tell you the same thing that the scripture says to the men, and that is, it's usually the areas in which you feel rebuked and corrected. The areas that are the most painful are usually the areas where the Lord is saying, that's what I'm working on, and I am producing within you this rarity, this value, by virtue of the strain and the stress that is presenting itself to you. And that's why it reminds us, if you remember in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 and 6 from Sunday morning, it's a quotation from Proverbs 3, 11 and 12, where it says, my son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, because everybody, every son he takes in, he disciplines. Well, it's the same with his daughters. So the term son just goes both ways. So if you're saying, well, I want to be this rare woman, realize it won't happen by accident. And just by wishing that it will happen won't make it happen. Desiring someday to graduate from college will not get you through college. You've got to go to college to graduate from college. Desiring someday to play an instrument well will not make you play an instrument well. You've got to pick it up and practice it. And you got to practice when you don't feel like practicing. And you got to get past the early stage where you think, I'll never get this, on into the I'm beginning to get it kind of stage. And the same is true in character. And people who give up along the way and they just do what comes easy and what comes natural to human life will not have that rare commodity. The good news is that the Lord is committed to bringing it about in us, more committed than we are, and he will bring about what's necessary to help us be trained. You are a rare woman if you're walking with God, and you're more valuable than jewels. Interestingly, too, the word excellent, an excellent or NIV renders this phrase noble character. The Hebrew word is a wonderful word, and it's a character trait men actually desire for themselves. And like I said, all of these character traits we talk about have to do with men and women. It's just that in among the women, it's personified here for the women. But this woman is spoken of with this Hebrew word that means strength, resourcefulness, deep character. It includes wisdom and it includes wealth very, very often. It's a term used in other contexts of being wise, and because you're wise, therefore wealthy, because you've done good business. Isn't that interesting? Because most of those characteristics we would automatically assume men would want to have. And men do want to have them. Here it's associated with women. And he says, this is the kind of woman that I am creating. I am making her excellent in these ways. Strong and resourceful. Those are amazing. In fact, this word is also used of whole armies. Isn't that interesting? It's a word that's used of armies. We don't associate that with femininity. We don't associate that with women. And yet, it is. Now, the women that I have known as a pastor and in my family have had such incredibly strong character. And often is the time when I have talked to people and thought to myself, I wish some of the men that I've talked to would have the character of the women that I've talked to. He says, this is what an excellent woman is. It has this incredible strength, this desire to do what's right. And it's associated with success. Powerful word. She is rare and she is valuable. Do you see value in being a woman? And you might think that's a dumb question to ask sisters. You know, it might be a dumb question to ask women if they see value in being a woman. But I don't think it's a dumb question at all, because many women don't see value in being women. They don't see themselves fitting into anything the world says is valuable for various different reasons. And they devalue themselves, and they don't see themselves as a person who is excellent and who can be excellent and who can be this way. They just don't see it. And sometimes men don't help, because the men look down on women sometimes. And we'll talk about that. But let me suggest to you that if your view of yourself is less than this, it need not be. And in fact, it's probably a false self-image. If you think you cannot be excellent, strong, and resourceful, and growing, like this word implies, then maybe your God is too small. Maybe you need to say, Lord, I repent. I will be like this. Show me how. I'm amazed through the years, over and over again, in talking with troubled families, how often I connect with sisters in the Lord who have such a low view of themselves, and it need not be so. Sometimes it's the husband's fault. Ought to be real honest with you. Sometimes men in her life have made her feel that way. But sometimes I can't find any reason for it at all. She just feels that way about herself. Doesn't see any value in who she is. Well, let me tell you something. God sees value in who you are. And when your opinion differs from God's opinion, you got to say, my opinion must be wrong. And despite what I may think are my shortcomings, I'm going to live up to the character that God says I can have. He says you are rare. He says you are precious, more valuable than jewels. She's also, this is the third characteristic, trustworthy and trusted, verses 11 and following. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. That's interesting because it means that because of what she's doing, he succeeds in what he's doing. And we'll see a little more about that in a minute. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Trustworthy and trusted. The NIV, I'm going to read the NIV rendering of this. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. He lacks nothing of value because he's able to lean on her completely. And that's an amazing, full confidence in her. Sees her as a true partner and trusts her. That's an astounding thing for both men and women to realize that that's actually God's design. That's an astounding thing. He trusts in her completely. He lacks nothing of value. And then it goes on and says, she brings him good and not harm all the days of her life. It's an amazing reality. What this means basically is that she's fulfilling, and this goes in perfectly with what the creation account says women are, which is the other half of the men. The support system, the strength that is the other half of his strength. And the Hebrew word ezer that's used of the woman in Genesis, in the creation account, means helper in the sense of completer, not in the sense of assistant, but in the sense of completer. And that's the way this woman is. This is a perfect cross-reference to that concept. And she's a tremendous assistance to her husband in this regard. You know what that means? That means that she cares about what he cares about. And he knows that she cares about what he cares about, and he therefore leans on her. This goes both ways. I said we learned some things from the men, for the men and for the women. One of the reasons that some men are disappointed in their relationships with their wives is because they really honestly do not invest any real trust in their wives for reasons known only to them. They refuse to actually include their wives in the actual partnership of the marriage. And they think that it's up to the man to do everything, and the wife just does what she's told. Nothing could be further from the truth in either the biblical teaching or in the biblical examples. And it's a grave error to treat your wife that way. But sometimes women don't see themselves as really being needed, and they don't try to actually help. Now, this woman actually sees what her husband sees as valuable, and she purposely inculcates within him the idea of trust, the idea of confidence and respect. One of the things I shared with the guys this last weekend with regard to our relationships with our wives and with women in general, whether it's a mom, whoever's significant to a man, the females that are significant to him. One of the things that I shared with the gentleman, and it is true of the women as well, is that you cannot adequately love someone unless you care about what they care about. Now, I'm going to say that again, because it is an absolute key to expressing love and concern, and it's an absolute key to what she gets in this passage. She gets a huge amount of respect in this passage. You say, why did she get so much respect? I'll tell you why. Because she cares about what he cares about. You look at what she's doing in this whole passage, and you'll find these are all the things that make sense to her husband. We're going to see a lot of stuff that she does, and you're going to see that it all makes sense to her husband. She cares about what he cares about. It's impossible to love somebody effectively if you don't care about what they care about. It doesn't do any good to say, honey, I care about you. I told the guys this. It doesn't do any good to tell your wife you care about her and love her if what you spend your time and your money on is the stuff you like and not the stuff she likes. Because that's crazy making. What it does is it says on the surface, I love you, and then it says with all of the rest of the meaningful things, I don't really give a rip about you. I spend all of my time and my money on my stuff. So I told the guys, spend some time and blow your wad on what your wife thinks is important. And the guys were looking at me kind of like, phew. But you see, everybody wants respect. This is how you get it. And watch this woman. Why does this woman have so much respect? It's because her husband lacks no gain. Now, what does that mean? What's it talking about? It means that because of what she does, he's getting what he's looking for. That means they're on the same page. You see what that means? That means she cares about what he cares about. What often happens in marriages and in relationships between men and women is that they are off page on this, and they try and generate warm feelings for each other. They try and say, well, I'm trying to love you. I'm really trying. Love, 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 love. I'm going to make love happen. I'm just going to make it happen. Let me tell you something. It doesn't work that way. In fact, most people, when they fall in love, you know, they fall in, right? What happens is, accidentally, they gave the other person the impression they cared about what they cared about. It turned out to be an accident, because after they got married, they found out it really wasn't true. I remember back when I was in college and I was working on my car, and my lovely bride, Barb, whom I love more than life itself, and that's the truth, came out and watched me work on the car. And after I was done, this was before we were married, and I'm thinking, this is a wonderful woman. She comes out in the rain. She sits here in the rain and watches me work on this old car to get it running, you know, so we could go on a date. I'm working on this thing, and I thought she was actually interested in this. And actually, after we got married, she didn't want to come out and watch me work on the car anymore. I couldn't figure it out. I thought, why doesn't she? She used to sit there and watch me, you know, and I thought this was wonderful. You know what I was doing? I was falling in love with my own reflection in her eyes as she peered back at me with love and honor, and mistaking my own reflection for her actual attachment to my automobile and my working on it. I thought this was important to her. It wasn't important to her at all. Not even a little bit. She told me later, she confessed it. It was miserable out there. She just wanted to be with me. But let me tell you something. The same principle that makes that early relationship work is actually the principle that makes the long-term relationships work. You find out what the person you say you love really cares about, then you decide to love that or those people, and you put time into it. And the benefit of that is tremendous respect back from the person that you are loving this way. They then translate that into real love. They feel in their hearts, well, he must really care about me, she must really care about me, because she cares about what I care about. That's the way this woman is to her husband. She cares about what he cares about, and she invests her time in it. And we're going to see in a minute, it's business. She's a businesswoman and a homemaker and a manager of all of his affairs behind the scenes. That's what this woman is. We'll see that's... But this is what's important to this guy. So, a piece of straight advice. Ladies, you want a strong, healthy relationship with the man in your life. And the man in your life might not be your husband. Might be your boyfriend. Now, if it's your boyfriend and you have a good relationship with him, you're already doing this. So you can check out. If you're married and this has started to drift off and you're not doing it anymore, take some advice. Find out what he is interested in. Or if you're a young woman living at home and your dad, and you're thinking, I want my dad to respect me. I want him to give me some space. I want him to find out what he's interested in. Spend some of your time and effort on what he thinks is important. And you will find awe and surprise coming from him. Say, well, you know, if you knew what my husband was interested in, you would realize why I have no interest in it. But you know what? Unless it's a sin, now assuming it's not a sin, all right? We're you know, he's not, he doesn't lead a cartel, you know, of drug dealers. We're talking about your average guy who has average kinds of interests, and you are not interested in any of them. This is perfectly natural. Men and women have different interests from one another. When I told the guys they need to be interested in what their wives were interested in, you should have seen the eyes rolling back in their heads. They're going, oh, no. It means I got to go to the mall. Whoa. Or whatever, you know. And we think, you know, because we're so different. But if the Lord is producing within us selflessness, this is the best way to do it. And that was the point at the men's retreat. The best way to do it, you see, is to find something we're not interested in and say, I want you to sacrifice some of your ideas and I want you to become interested, and you can develop a taste. You can acquire a taste for the things that interest your spouse. Men can do it. They can. They don't think they can, and they hide behind that. They say, oh, well, you can never do that. No, I can't understand women. That's not true. That's not true. What happens is you begin to understand them. It frightens you so badly that you stop thinking about it. But the thing is, if you try, you can, and the benefits are huge. And the same is true for women. You say, okay, I'm going to make a list of what my husband is interested in the order of interest. And you probably have more insight on that than he does. If I ask him, he'll say, well, I'm interested in God. And I'm interested in my family. And I'm interested in serving God. Because I'm a pastor, and if I ask him, that's what he'll say. But you actually know what he likes. So you start your list the way it really is. Sex? No, not really. But I'll get to that, and I mean it. He's interested in sports. He's interested in his work. He's interested in his friends. He's interested in competition. And I'm not interested in any of those things. Well, let me suggest to you that God gave you the man he gave you to help you understand some things about yourself. Just like he gave to your husband the woman he has given to your husband to help him understand some things about himself. So you say to yourself, okay, I'm gonna make it a science. I'm going to try and understand. If he likes sports, I'm going to try and figure out what sports he likes. And I'm going to learn about it. If I got to ask another guy, you got a husband that likes football? You should know the difference between first and 10 and first and goal. And if you don't know the difference between those two, honey, come and ask me afterwards. And the next time you sit down with your husband to watch a game, which might actually surprise him too, that you sit down and say, I'm going to watch this game. It's the Dallas Cowboys, isn't it? How'd you know that? Oh, the star on the helmet. Well, you see, if you look it up, it's simple. And you can surprise him. It's not so bad. It's not so bad. And furthermore, the more you know about something, the more you like it. That's how he got interested in it. The more you know about it, the more you like it. You can learn more about it. You can learn about his business. You can learn about what's important to him there. Why does he like it so much? And you can talk about it. Man, all he ever talks about is his business. Well, that's because it's important to him. Have you ever thought about making it important to you and letting him talk to you about it? There's a reason why a lot of men run away with women that they meet in business. And one of the reasons is because their wives are not interested in what they're interested in. What about sex? This is a grown-up talk. We dismiss the kids. When was the last time you asked yourself, what's the difference between my husband and me on this subject? Do I really know what makes him tick on the inside? Or am I like a lot of women who are like a lot of men when it comes to the difference between the sexes on the subject of sex? They just say, I don't want to know. I'm angry about it. I don't want to know. When was the last time you said, you know what? I think I am going to talk to somebody who can give me some advice about this because it's an area where we're not on the same page. Or I'll ask my husband. If you've got that good a relationship, believe it or not, it's tough to talk about for a lot of married couples. When was the last time you said, I want to learn more about it? I want to find out what goes on inside of a man that drives him in this way. And I want to cooperate with that. Now see, that is a page in your life that your husband cares about. This woman has respect from her husband and trust. Women all want respect and trust. Men want respect and trust, but they're not willing to pay the price to get it. You get it by caring about what the other person cares about and making significant sacrifices in that direction. That's how you get it. And when both people are doing it, what happens? Both of you get what you're looking for. And instead of saying, I'm not moving till you give me what I want, what you end up with is, no, really, you go first. I'll give you what you want. And that's really what I care about. And the other person's doing the same back. And the mutual respect goes way up. Well, that's the way this woman is. as much as I am convinced, it is up to the men to do it first. By virtue of the fact that they are the heads of the households, it's up to the men to live it out first. It is amazing how much can be accomplished by a woman who even has to do it alone and has to learn on her own before her husband catches up to what she's doing. It is amazing what an impact she can have by simply saying, I'm going to find out what's important to you, and within the parameters of godliness, I am going to cooperate with it and learn it, and I'm going to be a helpmate to you in those issues. That's the way this woman is. And the result, it says, her husband trusts in her, and he has no lack of gain, and she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Next characteristic, she is diligent in business as well as homemaking, verses 13 to 24. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands willingly or in delight. She's like merchant ships. She brings her food from a great distance. She rises also while it's still night. She gives food to her household, portions to her maidens. This woman is heading up a whole household. You say, well, my goodness, if I had servants that I could order around, that would be very nice, and I would be happy to get up and do that. But notice that she works with her hands. You get the impression this woman would do this whether she had servants or not, and that's exactly the truth. She considers a field and buys it. This is business. The Hebrew word considers means that she shrewdly schemes. Do you know that? That's what that means. She shrewdly schemes in the real estate game, finds a piece of land, figures out what's the best deal, probably bargains it down to the best price possible, calculates the kind of profit she's going to make, and buys the thing and puts a vineyard on it. This is a businesswoman, and the business that she does benefits her household. It benefits her homemaking. They're not in opposition to each other. You know, there's this weird thing that working outside the home and working within the home somehow have to always be in opposition to each other, and that's not true. That's not true. They actually need to blend together in a woman's life as well as in a man's life, but in different ways. She considers she's a sharp businesswoman. With her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength. It makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. It's a good feeling to know that you're doing a good job. And the better job you do, the better that feeling gets. Her lamp doesn't go out at night. That means it can mean one of two things. Either she burns the midnight oil and she keeps working when it needs to be done, or it means that she's saved up enough oil that they can burn it late into the evening. Either way, it means diligence. It means she's a hard worker. And she's really in partnership with her husband is the idea. And she realizes the importance of what she does and that it benefits him. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. These are the two parts of the spinning wheel when they would create cloth to make their own clothing. So she's working with her hands in this. She's not just telling other people to do it. She extends her hand to the poor. She's generous. She stretches out her hand to the needy. She has some left over because she's been frugal and because she's a hard worker. She has something left over to share. She is not afraid of the snow for her household. She's been thinking ahead. For all her household are clothed with scarlet. That means basically it's a reflection on her that she's been able to clothe them this well. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Same idea, high quality. Now, verse 23 is stuck in the middle of this. I don't know if you guys have ever read this passage. I'm sure many of you have as mature Christians. Do you ever wonder what verse 23 is doing there? It says, her husband is known in the gates, and he sits among the elders of the land. And then it goes on talking about her again. She's working her tail off. She's doing all this stuff, and he is sitting in the gates. Did you ever think that was kind of like bunk? I mean, it's like, here's the wife doing all this work, and here's the husband sitting there with his cronies puffing on a pipe and talking. What in the world is this about? Well, you know what it is? This is a compliment to her. That's why it's in here, and you got to understand something. The gates were the courthouses of the day. The gates of the cities were huge. A sizable city might have gates in it the size of this room, with multiple rooms inside and even bigger. And it was where they did all the business of the city. What this is saying is, this man that she is married to is so benefited by what she does that his character is improved and he is seen as a leader in the community. That's why he's sitting in the gates and with the elders. And furthermore, he has the time to do that because of what she's doing by managing his assets and by taking care of what's going on in the business. He then has an opportunity to make contributions, which in that culture were extremely important. There were very clear divisions of labor among men and women and among men, one to another. And what it's saying is, because of her hard work, he is succeeding in a worthy enterprise. He's making a contribution to the community. So she's also making a contribution to the community. That's an interesting thing. It's her work, and it's his work as well, but she helps him to make that. Her husband is a man of respect. Women can make or break their husbands. You can make or break your husband. And it's the same is true of men and their wives. Men can make or break their wives by how they treat them, how they speak to them, how they view them. And there are many broken women because of men who have broken them. But there are many broken men as well. Men will not let on how much their wife's opinion means. But it means a lot. It means a lot. If she reflects back respect, being on the same page, seeking to help, it will set him free to grow. I mean, we're assuming some things. We're assuming he's a godly man. We're assuming that sin is not constantly at the door here. But assuming those things, she sets him free to grow. And she's willing to let him go and be a part of that other work. Sometimes women don't do that. Sometimes they don't do it. And they are very, very angry at their husbands all the time. And it can break a man. Be careful. Be careful. The reason this word is in here about the man sitting in the gates is because his ability to do that is a positive reflection on her willingness to be a helpmate to him. It's a badge to her that he's able to do that. It's not a bad thing, and it doesn't mean he's a lazy guy. In fact, what you find all through Proverbs, in fact, almost everywhere in Proverbs, except this chapter, all of the diligence and the hard work is enjoined upon the men. This is the only chapter where it talks about the women doing it. All through Proverbs, it's the man who is diligent and hardworking and so on. Here you find her doing it, setting him free to do something else that is a contribution, and that is a great honor to her. By reflection. Verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Strength and dignity are her clothing. She smiles at the future. Here's the next main characteristic, verses 25 to 27. She is wise and instructive. 25 to 27, strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. It's a wonderful, wonderful characteristic. The strength and the dignity are what she knows she has. She knows she has them. She knows she has strength and she knows she has dignity, and she is willing to live in those realities. And furthermore, as she grows in wisdom, she's able to speak to other people about it. And the kindness that is on her tongue, the teaching of kindness. That Hebrew word for kindness is a real famous word, chesed, which means covenant love. And what it's really saying is this, and get this picture, ladies, get this picture. It's true of men, and it should be true of men as well. It could easily be said of them, or should be. But what he's saying about the woman of the house, and whether she's in business, she's out buying and selling land, or whether she's in her home managing the affairs of the house, when she opens her mouth, there is a teaching of covenant love. That's chesed, that's the word kindness, that comes through her. It is a commitment love that affects everything going on in the household because she is this way. I've known homes that were held together almost entirely by the chesed of the woman. In fact, there's a saying among men that a man can say, I've been married this long simply because my wife never left me. And that's a sad way to put it, but it's true. Because it was her faithfulness that held everything together. And sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes it's just the faithfulness of the man. And I know there are runaways out of marriages today. But it's interesting that he says she promotes this covenant-keeping love in everything she says, and out of this comes this dignity, this wisdom. It's amazing to be in a home where when the woman speaks, everybody is quiet and listens. Because she doesn't talk that often. I was at a gathering of men about, must have been 10 years ago now. And we were at a man's house who was an a very well-known spiritual leader in our culture, who has since gone on to be with the Lord. But we were there, and we were talking about theology. In fact, in the process of writing some papers about some theological issues. And it was the most fascinating thing, the most interesting thing happened. Here we are talking, there's about six or eight of us, and we're back and forth with things. We're writing it down, it's going up on an overhead in the living room, and we're working out these papers and making these comments. And these are, I was there for comic relief. These guys were heavy hitters. I mean, they're all doctors and stuff, PhDs in their fields and so on, and theology professors and stuff. I don't know what I was doing there, but they were saying all this stuff. And it was going, and all of a sudden, the wife of the host, who's in her late 60s, been a Christian woman since before she was born, I think, she walks in, and she's among the most soft-spoken women I have ever known. And I'm serious. She speaks barely above a whisper. Not because it's fake or anything. She's just a very soft-spoken person. She stood there and listened as we were talking, and she said, "You know, I have a thought about that." Out of the blue, "I have a thought about that." She listened carefully for several minutes, got the flow of what we were talking about. She said, "I have a thought about that." Every one of those guys was just, they just closed their mouth and they listened to what she had to say. And they wanted to. And it was like she stepped into that situation, opened her mouth with wisdom. No, not even a hint of anger, competition, anything like that from either side. She just stepped in and she said, "I have a thought about that." Everybody wanted to know what it was. We were not leaving till we found out what she had to say. And she made a significant contribution to that particular paper. It was awesome to see. It was awesome to see. Ladies, that's the way you want to be. That is the way you want to be. So that when you open your mouth, wisdom and kindness and gentleness come out. So that the men, if they are wise, will say, "I want to hear what you have to say. And we're going to listen until you're finished saying it, and we're going to take it seriously." That's the way you want to be. That's the way this woman is. Strength and dignity are her clothing. She smiles at the future. When she opens her mouth in wisdom, she has the teaching of kindness on her tongue. And here's the last characteristic. She's considered worthy by those who know her the best. Verses 27 and following. She looks well to the ways of her household. She doesn't eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and bless her. And I have to add the word eventually. Okay, so let's add that word in there. You know, if you expect this to happen every day, all through the teen years, my sister, think again. It doesn't happen every day all through the teen years. But you walk with God, and someday your children will bless you for it. Her husband also praises her and says, "Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all." Oh, now again, ladies, don't hold your breath every single day for your husband to wise up and say, "I appreciate what you're doing." And sometimes men are loath to open their mouth about it, though they should speak freely of these things. They are loath. It's, you know, "My wife is so wonderful. Sometimes it's all I can do to keep from telling her." You remember that old farmer guy who just lives that way? Sometimes they won't tell you. But you trust God. Eventually, your husband will see the character that is in your soul. And this is how God sets life up. He sets life up so that the people who know us the best reflect back to us the closest truths. And that's a very sobering thing, because we live in a world that likes celebrity, but celebrity is very plastic. A guy or a woman can look really good on the cover of a magazine when no one has to know them. But then how often have you found out that in real life, behind the scenes, the people who know them the best don't like them at all? In God's word, it's the opposite. In God's word, he could care less what the crowds think. It's always the people who know you the best. And one of the things I told the men last weekend was, your wife knows more about you than you do, and you need to listen to her, because she's the closest one to you, and she's somewhat unbiased on some things that you're very biased on regarding who you are. The same is true for women and their husbands and their children. Very often, a woman can look good on the outside, and yet behind closed doors, there's a hypocrisy there. It's true for both men and women. In this woman's case, and that's what he's getting at here, the people who know her the best are the people who love her the most. And they know all of her problems, but they still say, you're walking with God. That doesn't mean that every day is good. That doesn't mean you never have a fight. That doesn't mean you never have a misunderstanding. You know better than that. We're talking the long haul here, the long range thing. But notice how it comes out. She's considered worthy by those who know her the best. There was a 4th century pagan philosopher. Labienus was his name. He was a pagan, not a Christian. But it's interesting, he made a comment. He said, and it's a very short quote, so listen carefully, what women those Christians have. End quote. In awe, he looked at the Christian community and he said, whoa, what women those Christians have. Now, what would inspire a pagan philosopher to so admire Christianity just because of the women? Just because of the quality of the women in there? It is this character. That's what it is. And it is the source of all the beauty. And it is honorable above jewels. And it's really what it's about. It's what he's doing inside of us. This character change. Charm is deceitful, beauty is vain. The woman who fears the Lord will be praised. Give her the product of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. Let her know. Let me close with a couple of thoughts. First of all, if you're a woman here, you're thinking one of two things. Either, I guess I'm not doing so bad, or I think I'm going to go cut my head off. I am totally blowing it here. I am not doing well at all in any of these areas, you know? I am just absolutely a failure in all of this, and your danger here is to go out of here thinking, I could never live up to that. I could never live up to that. Well, you know, let me give you a word of advice. If that's the way you feel, if you feel completely deflated and you think, I can never live up to this, the word is from Proverbs 3, verses 11 and 12. My daughter, do not faint when the Lord reproves you. For whom the Lord loves, he reproves. And he scourges every son and daughter that he receives. It's not the end of the world. If you're still breathing, he's still working. And that means that there are things that you can do now, things you can learn from now, and this is what to shoot for. This is where to move. This is the direction to go. This is what he's calling you on in. You say, oh man, I just feel terrible about all these things. Then take these things to him and make this list a prayer list. And say, Lord, I see these right in here. Would you please remind me of these every single day and let me grow in character like this? Same thing we tell the men, exactly the same thing. And don't be hopeless. If the Lord loves you enough to bring you here tonight to hear this, then he loves you enough to bring these things into your life. Don't go away thinking it can't be true and it can never happen for you. It can and it will. And that's what he's working on. And when it does, you'll look back on it and you'll say, thank you, Lord. Now for the men, let me suggest to you that we as men must learn from the character of the women in our lives. This is very similar to what I said at the men's retreat and was part of the whole thing there a couple weeks ago. Let me stress it here because look at the character that's here and look at the benefit that this husband receives from this wife. Gentlemen, let us forever put aside the idea that the women in our lives are to be ignored or looked down upon or to be joked about or to be taken lightly. Because this character is what we need to learn from them. And very often the women in our lives have this character in much higher quantity than we do. We find often that a man can learn a tremendous amount from his wife if he'll listen to her, or even from his mom, or even from a woman that he happens to work with, or even from a woman who works for him, if he'll take the time to listen and pay attention. God gave to us each other, men and women. And we can't live without each other, and we hardly can live with each other, okay? And the reason that he uses us this way is to teach us how to think with wisdom, to force us, by the differences between each other, to force us to be more like he is, because neither of us is complete like Jesus. We need each other to learn these things. So, gentlemen, learn from your wives and learn the kind of character that we see here. Find it in your wife and affirm it in her and in the other women in your life. Look for it and affirm it. Because it's only a fool who says, I won't learn anything from the women in my life. You guys know who Jerome was, St. Jerome? If you don't know who he is, you really should. He was one of the most important of all the church fathers, the guy whose name you might not understand or remember. He lived in the late 4th and early 5th centuries. And he translated the Bible out of Hebrew and Greek into Latin. It became the Latin Vulgate. He was personally responsible for that entire translation. He was a monk and a priest, and he lived in Bethlehem for much of his scholarly career. In fact, in Bethlehem, if you go there, there's a statue right next to the Church of the Nativity. There's a statue of Jerome standing there. That's where he did most of his work on the Latin Vulgate. And the Latin Vulgate Bible, by the way, was the Bible for the church for 1,000 years. It shaped Christian thinking. This was a giant of a man. Well, you know, did you know that he dedicated his books to women? He dedicated his writing to women. He was a celibate monk, but he had huge respect for women in his life, and he dedicated his works to these women, and he was widely criticized for that. In a very patriarchal culture, he was widely criticized for not dedicating his works to men, being as well known as he was. This is what he said. Listen to what he to his critics when he dedicated his works to women. He said, "These people do not know that while Barak trembled, Deborah saved Israel. That Esther delivered from supreme peril all of the children of God. Is it not to women that our Lord appeared after his resurrection? Yes. And the men could then blush for not having sought what the women had already found." That's a good quote from a celibate monk who translated the Bible. And when he was finished, he said, "I'm going to dedicate this to women."